from the palmetto swamps to the piney woods to the oak flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast presented by Scree Gear Performance Hunting Apparel Performance Layering System. Hear about it every week on the podcast. And with the new year upon us, if you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas from Scree, if nobody on your Christmas list hooked you up, or Santa Claus didn't hook you up, or any of those things. I speaking with the guys at Scree recently, they're very well stocked, got a lot of new gear and inventory, so you ought to be able to get some really good shipping times now that the holiday seasons are over. And our code LABH still applies for all regularly priced items, 20% off your first purchase at Scree. And follow them on social media, check out YouTube. You can see some of my own content there, as well as lots of other content that really inform you a lot about the specifics of the gear, what it does, what makes it stand out, what makes it different. All of that stuff is out there. I encourage you to follow along with them and take in some of that and make the decision for yourself. Quality gear. I know you'll like it. Check them out. Shop online, ScreeGear.com. Kyler, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man.
Did you have a Merry Christmas?
Yeah, I did. It was a good Christmas. My mom's in town and hunted a lot. Still hunting a lot. That's about it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you a couple of things. Number one, how was your Christmas?
It was good. It was hot, but it was good.
Yeah, same here.
I'm just too hard headed to let that go, so I just have to throw it in there.
I want if you're willing to talk about it. Can you give us, like, an update on your son's hunting adventures behind the house, bow hunting?
Yes.
Tell us about that. Tell us what happened today.
No, you haven't seen the second update. It happened again today. It's happened twice today.
No way.
It happened again at 5 o'clock. Yeah, so you guys that listen to the podcast, and you may have, if you follow and you watch, you probably saw where I video my son hunting a lot, and this is his first year to be able to bow hunt, like really bow hunt. And he killed a really nice buck on the day before Halloween. It was his first deer, buck with a bow, and that was on our property down the road from our house. But we have a little bit of woods right in our backyard, just right off our yard. So since then, he's put him a stand up off the backyard and throwing a little corn out on the ground, and I put one of my cameras on it. This is back November, so there's a lot of does and little scrubby spikes and stuff around the house that we even see them, you know, in the yard from time to time. Taking a lot of pictures of those, and he's like, "Daddy, you know, what should I shoot?" I'm like, "Buddy, you're 13. You've shot one deer with a bow. Shoot what you want to shoot. It's legal. Shoot it. You know, like, enjoy it. Don't make it, you know." But I did tell him. I said, "Look, man, there's six or seven does around here all the time, and they eat your corn every day, and you get pictures of them. If you wait around, a nice buck's probably going to show up closer to the rut." So he got a cellular camera for Christmas. And I got him the cellular camera very specifically because he has my cellular camera apps on his phone. So he sees all my cameras that are scattered out on all the different places I hunt.
So
as well.
Do you get the photos, or does he get the photos?
We both get them. We both are logged into the app on our individual cell phones.
Okay.
Which is kind of a cool father-son thing because it's one of the things that we talk about every day. He's like, "Daddy, did you check the cameras? Did you see that buck? Did you see those deer? Did you see that, you know?" Got a picture the other day of a bobcat with a rabbit in his mouth. And he was like, "Did you see that bobcat with that rabbit in his mouth?" You know, just stuff like that.
That's cool.
And so we both logged in to the app on our phones. And so got him a cell cam so he could put it back here on his stand. Obviously, I don't hunt back there. It's just one little chunk of woods off our backyard that borders up to another small block of woods and then the highway. And it's not, you know, it's nothing. Just his thing, a place for him to learn, you know, and I've talked to you about it. So we go back there on Christmas Day to put up his cell camera, and we pull the old camera out of the woods and check it, and there's a really, I mean, I'm just going to say a big buck. Not a nice buck, a big buck.
Yeah, there's no asterisk. There's no. It's not like nice for X. It's not nice for X parish. It's not nice for backyard. It's a nice buck anywhere.
Anywhere.
Like, anywhere that you see a buck.
Yeah, like
nice
it is
buck.
A stud yeah. 8-point.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, when I told you if you were just patient that a nice buck, I'm thinking like, you know, a nice little rack buck's going to show up back here in my backyard chasing these does around. This thing's, it's bigger than anything I got on camera at my property down the road. And it's there in the daylight, like three times the week of Christmas. And he's like camped out, you know. And who blames him, right? I mean, there's there in the daylight. He's camped out. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And so today is the first day that he didn't go hunting because he had made plans with a friend of his to just go hang out because they're on holiday break from school. So he got up this morning. My wife dropped him off at his buddy's house for the day while she went to work. And at 9 o'clock, the deer is standing right in front of his camera.
Oh, my God.
And it stood there for 20 minutes eating corn.
Oh, that's painful.
So my wife, this is the part you don't know. I sent you those pictures. What you don't know is my wife got home with him at about 5:30 this afternoon, and the deer was at that time in front of his stand. It had been there since 5
God.
O'clock. It came back at 5 o'clock. And ate for 15 or 20 minutes in the day. So either morning or afternoon hunt today, conceivably, if he didn't get smelled or busted or something, he might have
sure.
got a shot. But it is not just that. Another shooter showed up at 9:45 this morning.
Oh, my God.
So he had 3 bucks between 9 and 9:45 past his camera on the first day he hadn't hunted since he put his camera out on Christmas.
That's so painful, man.
He's learning.
I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. I wanted to ask you that because we need to talk about the weather. We haven't really mentioned it much, and it's not, for some reason, it's not being mentioned as much online as it should be, in my opinion. But this weather is bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's 76 degrees today, and it is New Year's, almost New Year's Eve.
It was 82 at my house. When I got home at 3 o'clock this afternoon, when I got in my truck, now granted, you know, the thermometer, when it's sitting in the parking lot, the thermometer's through the roof, but still, my truck was 99 degrees at 3 o'clock this afternoon when I got in it. 99 degrees. And then it was 82, like actual temperature outside, it was 82 degrees.
Well, let me tell you what's been interesting, because I've been hunting all week. When I worked for corporations, Christmas, the week between Christmas and New Year's was always a wash. It was always just like, why am I here? Why didn't I take my vacation type of thing? And so when I started my own company and it started getting bigger and we got employees, blah, 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 I made it a policy. Hey, we're closed. Go enjoy your time with the family. I'm going to go hunting. If you're from Texas, go back to Texas. If you're from Atlanta, go back to Atlanta. And it's a free week off. Just go do your thing. So we've been closed this whole week, and I've been hunting out of principle this week just because I've been planning on it all week long, but also it's the rut in my area where I'm hunting, and I've been hunting not super hard. I did accidentally make an all-day hunt yesterday. I'll go into more detail on that, but I have been seeing a lot of buck activity on stand, but almost all of my cameras are dead, like dead as a doornail, nothing moving, dead. And I mentioned a little bit about that last week on the podcast, and then I've got a whole nother week of that under my belt to kind of elaborate on. So yesterday I go and hunt this area that I've been waiting for this week all year to go in and hunt it. And I know it's right. My cameras are popping off the last 2 weeks in there. So I decided to hunt it on a south wind versus what I really wanted to hunt, which is the north wind. And this is a spot that I killed my buck on December 27th, which was yesterday, when we were, 2 days ago, excuse me. And today's the 30th? I don't even know.
Today's the 30th.
Sorry. Okay. So it was a long time ago, a couple of days ago. And but I killed my buck from the ground, my last buck of the season, last year on December 27th at like 3:05 p.m. And so I've been hunting this spot on a north wind, kind of I don't say a bad wind. It's not a bad wind. I'm not blowing the spot out, but having to come in with a different game plan than I was intending to this week. And I hunted a spot, and I saw 8 deer all day, and I saw 6 of them by 11 o'clock. And 2 of them were hammer 8 points, like probably, I don't know, 130, 135 class 8 points. They were together. I didn't know they were together. So that's a quick story. I'm on stand. I saw a little basket 6 point at daybreak. It walked, it kind of did a circle around me and moved on. And then I saw a doe. And then at 9:45, 10 o'clock, I saw this buck about 80 yards to my east, which is my left. And so I get my grunt call out. And I'm sure we're all guilty of this. You know, when you see a deer, I don't know if y'all do this, but when I grunt at a deer at a distance, I like to look through my binoculars when I do it. Like, yeah. I'll hold my binoculars up and I'll watch. I want to see how he reacts. Right. I don't just want to see him turn his head, but like, a lot of times, if a buck's really like doesn't want to be bothered, or he's like really going in a direction very intently, he'll just turn his ears back towards you. He won't actually like turn and his head and face you. And I want to see that. So I'm looking at him through my binoculars, and I only see this one buck. And so I go, bah, nothing. A little louder, bah, nothing. And like after the 5th round of this, I sound like I'm playing a flute pretty much. And like just like screaming through this grunt call, trying to get any reaction out of this buck because he's not hearing me at all. Well, on that last, what sounds like a goose honk, a Canada goose honk of a grunt call, I see the bottom of antlers coming through me at the bottom in my binoculars. And it's another buck that I never saw coming in to kick my ass. And I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't see that buck there. So he gets to, like, 40 yards, catches my wind, kind of goes into my wind direction and stops and locks up. And he's looking for me. And doesn't come any closer. And I'm hunting with the trad bow. I'm not hunting with my compound. I don't even know if I could have shot him with the compound from just our situation. But anyway, so – they end up moving on. They don't get any closer. They end up going back into the thicket. I climb down at 11 o'clock, move to where they were because I was planning on moving my stand, coming back in the afternoon, like an hour and a half, and then hunt the rest of the day. And I move my stand over there. I'm like halfway setting up my stand. I'm on my top stick about to put my stand on, and a spike walks by at 11:15, and then at 11:20, right when I finish putting, this is when I say I accidentally hunted all day yesterday, right when I finish hanging my stand and I'm like setting it on the tree, cam locking it down, I get one of my camera's dings from about 150 yards away, and it's like another hammer 8 point, not one of the two that I just saw, just at 11:20 in the morning, walking around middle of this slough that's dry. And so I was like, well, there's some, I had a tuna packet in my backpack and I had a barbecue, Vienna sausage. I was like, well, there's lunch. I guess I'll just stay here, you know? And, the story doesn't end very, not, like nothing else happens. I see 2 more deer that day. They're both out of range. None of them were really shooters. And, but they're moving is my point. It's a long story to say that they don't really care. Like they yeah. might. They might be a little more like at the bookends of the day, like regular season, but I'm also getting a lot of midday activity on those cameras. The problem is they aren't patternable. And maybe I'm learning this as I, you know, hunt places that has higher rut activity, like actual chasing and responsiveness to calls and stuff. Yeah. But they aren't on my cameras. But they are undoubtedly on their feet. You know what I mean?
Like I got the same thing. Partner, I got the same thing.
My business partner's like, well, I'm not gonna go. I don't have anything on camera. And I'm like, no, you need to go.
Yeah.
Like you gotta get out there, bro. They are out there. They just aren't in front of your rice bran pile or whatever. And that's not what I'm hunting. I'm hunting funnels and pinches and scrapes and stuff. But I still, they're not going to those places. It's really odd. It's like the cameras, I might as well not even have them out, but you sit on stand and you see 8 deer.
So I, I've been busy this week, and the only day I hunted this week was Monday, and I saw two ape. Neither one of them. I passed one. One of them I couldn't get a shot at, and he was too small for what I wanted to shoot. The next one was borderline, and I passed him just because private property and, you know, just looking for a bigger deer. But he was a decent 8-point, chasing does or chasing a doe. Well, one of them, the smaller one was really chasing the doe, grunting, carrying on. The bigger one was trailing along right behind him. That's the only day I hunted, but I'm experiencing the same thing, and it's interesting you brought that up because today I came home and I made the decision that I've got three cellular cameras on trails and scrapes, and none of them have taken a picture in 3 days or 2 days, yeah, 2.5 days. And I'm like, so I made a decision instead of going hunting this afternoon in 82 degrees on December the 30th, I went and checked on these cameras, like formatted the cards, made sure there was nothing wrong with them, first of all, and moved them around a little bit because I'm like, I mean, even if they're not in a good spot, in 2.5 days, I should have got a picture of a doe walking by or something, you know. But in saying that, you know, it rained a little bit this week, and just I spent a couple of hours on my place moving some cameras around and stuff, and I checked a few cameras that aren't cell cameras, and there's some activity, and there's a lot of sign, a lot of fresh scrapes on the ground, a lot of tracks in the, you know, in the mud where it's rained recently. And so I agree with you. I don't know. The patterns are all off. I think they're just kind of all over the place and very unpredictable in a lot of cases. So, I agree. I think it's crazy too, because social media is such a barometer for us in everything in life nowadays, but it's that way really because if you watch social media, the different hunting groups around the state and different places, I mean, there's people killing and getting trail cam pics and witnessing, seeing from stand lots of deer, even though the weather is absolutely horrible.
Garbage.
I think it's definitely a time to hunt, and I think the front that's pushing through Sunday or Saturday night and Sunday and Monday might be really good.
Well, unfortunately, I'm getting really, really good use of my Scree early season pants right now. very frustrating.
Early season on. I feel horrible. I kind of feel bad for all the people that bought all the new late season stuff like they came out with this year.
like my ptarmigan pants got here today or tomorrow.
I had a buddy of mine the other day. He's like, man, I got all this. He bought the bibs and a jacket, the really cold weather stuff right before Christmas. He's like, man, it just kind of jokingly. He's like, I got all this super nice Scree gear, you know, and something about, you know, just some, I don't know what the joke was. He made a joke about it, but he can't wear it. And I was like, well, don't worry. It'll be freezing in February.
Hey, this is off subject, but I follow a lot of duck hunters, or just like a byproduct of following some of my friends and people in my network. They post duck hunting stuff. Some of them are, I know for a fact, posting pictures from last season or earlier this season. Now, treating it like now, because they'll be in full Sitka, like it's 31 degrees outside, and I'm like, dude, it was 67 degrees at 5 a.m. this morning. You were not wearing that in flooded temper. I'm sorry. You should be in a t-shirt. Like, this should be like teal season. And I think some of the waterfowl people are lying, and I think they've been lying for a long time and posting pictures from other hunts, and now they're getting busted because, like, I'm taking notice of the fact that, like, bro, it's been 70-plus every day for 8 days. You didn't kill those mallards in the swamp this morning, dressed like you're ready to go on an exploration in the on the South Pole. Yeah. You know, that didn't happen today. I was born at night, but not last night.
Yep.
So anyway, so I had to say that.
We're gonna get to our guest. I got a great segue. Our guest today is Brian Anders, the owner of the taxidermy shop. You hear we've done some advertisements for Brian on the podcast, and we're going to jump and talk to Brian in just a second. But let me give you the segue, okay? It is currently, as we are talking, it is 7:54 p.m. and I have my Moultrie app pulled up, and the last picture I have of my son's deer is at 751. So the deer, I have it set to send auto as soon as it takes a picture. The deer is back, and he has been there since 716, and it just sent me a picture at 753 of him. I am sitting in my office recording this podcast at 7:55, and the last picture came at 7:53. He's currently about 200 yards from me eating Nate's buck bait.
That's funny.
We'll see if he can get. So the segue is this: now with all these pictures today, he's determined he's hunting tomorrow. If he kills him, I'm gonna have to call Brian because he's that big. So with that being said, Brian, thank you for listening to us talk for all that time. How you doing, man? Thank you for joining the call.
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
We tend to start talking and just go on and on and on. Our guests every week are brought to you by our friend Brian Chamberlain, the Chamberlain Lending Team with Movement Mortgage. And if you're in need of a residential loan, primary or secondary vacation investment, cash out, rate reduction, renovation for add-ons, any of these kind of needs, contact Brian. Nobody does better. Low credit scores, potentially 0% down, and the Movement Mortgage, 42% of their profits go towards charitable organizations through the Movement Foundation, and that sets them apart. Brian is licensed in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, NMLS number 114586, and Movement Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender, NMLS ID number 39179. Yeah, so, if he's able to kill this deer, you're going to have – I've already got several things at your shop.
Right.
And we're going to end up with another one because this one's bigger than the last one he killed in October, a lot bigger than the one he killed in October. But so how's your season going, man?
Well, going good for a lot of people around the area. Like he was saying about the weather, it's not affecting the deer movement. They're on their feet and they're hitting the ground around here. I'm taking in a few bucks a day at least. They're moving.
See, that's crazy. Well, that's one of the things that I had really thought about when we were prepping for the episode. I thought that's like one of the questions I wanted to ask. I think it's kind of a cool dynamic. A taxidermist is a great person to get info from because you are talking to so many people, a diverse, you know, from private land hunters to public land hunters to heavily managed to hunting clubs. You know, you're getting a real, you know, you're kind of like you're right there in line with the deer processor guy. You get all the stories.
That's right. I get to hear how they were killed and when they were killed, and it definitely, I guess, it could, you know, help out a lot of people knowing what to do and where to go and what to, you know. Well, it's a lot of strange, you know. You hear a lot of things, people killing giant bucks in food plots in the morning time. It's just a weird time of year. You just really got to be there. Like y'all were saying about the cameras, my cameras are the same way. I mean, it's just like they're dead. But then you go out on stand, you see eight deer, and they never cross your camera's path, you know. It's just,
yeah. I don't know.
You just got to be out there.
I think it might have been on the last podcast, maybe it was, but I made the comment that I often think about this time of the year, and when I kind of imagine the deer movement, I imagine it like kind of the way a tracking dog works. They just kind of work in odd formations because they're trying to cross a trail and pick it up and start following it. So they don't have a pattern. They don't use the trails where your cameras are. You know, they obviously aren't focused on food. That's not their focus at all. Right. So, you know, if you have your cameras and stuff on popular pinch points and trails where you always have deer, right now they're kind of crisscrossing and figure eighting and going all over the place when they're on their feet because they're trying to crosswind or somehow pick up the scent of a doe, and so they're just completely different than what any typical pattern you may have. So my question was going to kind of be more, but you kind of answered it, was going to kind of be more along the lines of, you know, increase or decrease with the weather, but I guess you're saying that it seems to be
I would say it, even with all the hot weather we've had, it's the deer have been hitting the ground a lot better than, you know, they were a month ago. And, you know, it's just been every day. And I'm actually really looking forward to this cold front coming. I'm actually thinking about, I may need another freezer because, I mean, it's, I mean, they're coming in this good with the hot weather. I'm expecting it to get pretty good when the weather changes.
I actually saw you the other day, and I started to stop and speak to you, but I was on my way somewhere, and I was in a hurry. But I saw you parked at a gas station, and there was like three or four dudes standing around. I figured somebody must have dropped off a big buck, and you had it in your truck because there was a bunch of people standing around.
Yeah. Hey, I met a guy at Vines. Hey, I'll meet you anywhere. You call me with a big deer, I'm coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or anything for that matter.
Well, that's where you were, so that's probably what it was.
Yeah, it was 11 point in the back of the truck at the time. Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's so you do you know, obviously Louisiana Bow Hunter Podcast. We talk mostly about bow hunting and archery. You're you bow hunt a pretty good bit, right?
Oh yeah, always have.
Well, one of the things we like to always ask people, regardless of where they're coming from, you know, you're a taxidermist, and we talk to lots of different people, biologists and just deer hunters and stuff. But we always like to ask people, you know, what kind of bow are you shooting? What's your setup? You know, what's your archery setup?
Well, it's kind of crazy. It's not no great story or anything, but it's actually the bow I started really bow hunting with 20 years ago, probably when I was 17, I guess. I got a Matthews MQ1. That was my first real bow to hunt with. And I used that bow for years, did well with it. Hunted all over, shot a lot of stuff with it, had fun with it. And I just felt like one year I said, you know, I think I need to move up. They had made so much innovations and everything in bows, and said, I'm gonna go get me a brand new one. So I went and got me a brand new Matthews, and it was a smaller, shorter bow. And it just never really, I hunted with it for several seasons. It just never really fit me that well. And I ended up picking up bad habits and this and that. And I said, one year I said, you know what? I never had a problem with my old bow. I'm going back to it. And I went back to shooting that old bow. And that's probably been 6 years ago. I went back shooting it and picked right back up where I left off.
That's pretty cool because there's a lot of different conversations that we find ourselves in where it kind of ends up getting said, or I end up saying this a lot because it comes to mind for me a lot, is like we think about all these different things and we consider all these different things as it pertains to new equipment and innovation and technology. And we forget the fact that we being just the general hunting public, I mean, people were very successful with things that we might not even consider shooting compared against what's out there nowadays. And, you know, Indians killed a lot of deer,
yeah.
You know, with a stick and string. So that's cool. Kyler has a bad habit of trying to make things as hard as he can. He hunts with a damn longbow, so
yeah. I've been hunting with it a lot recently. Like, I've been hunting with it almost exclusively since you left camp, I haven't gotten a shot at a deer. I've seen a lot of deer, but I haven't had anything 20 yards or under that I wanted to sling something at. But I'm pretty damn good with that thing now, man. Like, for real. I'm not kidding you. Like,
I watched you shoot at the camp.
I have total confidence in it. My real issue with it now is I'm with the rut and like watching these deer like literally run by. I don't know if I could get a lethal shot off shooting real fast at one, like, or stopping one or something. So I went back to my compound this morning. I got some Grim Reaper broadheads. I sent you a picture of that yesterday.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to shake some things up and change gear. But yeah, I'm making a few changes. Now, what's interesting about you shooting your, say, old bow is, I mean, you do that out of confidence, right? It's just what fits you well and what you have ultimate confidence in. And, Levi Madden's dad still shoots a Hoyt from, God, I don't know. I couldn't guess the model. It's got to be from mid to early 2000s, like maybe 2004, 2005. And then our buddy David DeLucci, he's still shooting like a Q2 or something.
Yep.
He's got a Q2 Matthews with a Hoyt quiver on it.
Yep.
It's pretty funny setup, but I don't think he's still shooting aluminum arrows, but he's like, why would I upgrade? It's like, this is what I killed deer with, to kill a machine. And I was talking with Chase Metz yesterday about, he's like, listen, I've got a Z7. I don't know a damn thing about my arrows. I shoot Grim Reaper broadheads, and I practice about four times before every season, and I killed deer, and it's just what he's like. That thing's like a third arm. And so whatever you feel ultimate confidence in, I get that, man.
Yeah. It's a big part of archery. It's a huge part of archery.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So I'm curious, Brian, what broadhead are you shooting?
Grim Reaper, 100 grain.
Well, you're smart, A. I'm their biggest spokesperson, and I don't have anything to do with them other than being a consumer. But yeah. I'm curious, you know, has your broadhead selection changed going from the older bow? Like when you shot the newer, obviously your newer bow, I'm sure it was faster. You know, did you modify your broadhead selection because of, you know, going back to a slower bow or anything like that?
No, I just kind of changed. I had a broadhead I was in love with, used it for years. I mean, worked phenomenal. And then all of a sudden it just, I don't know if they just weren't making them as well or what, but I started having pass-throughs and I would end up with no blades when it exited. And I went through that for a little while, and I tried to transition to Rage, and they didn't work for me as well as others, you know, so I ended up shooting this, and I've had great success with them, so
yeah,
that's what I've stayed
with. Do you know which models do you shoot, ones, like the two-inch white tail special?
That's right, that's it. Mm-hmm.
Razor tip.
That's what I just got two packs of those locks. And then you sent me the 1 3/4 inch. That's what you shoot.
Yeah.
But those, the 1 3/4 are not in stores anywhere. It's the model number 1904. I had to order those online. And so I've been saying this is going to be an experiment because I shoot light arrows and a really fast bow. Like I'm shooting 326. And so I'm pretty sure I have enough ass to open that 2-inch broadhead. But I'm probably going to end up sticking with 1 3/4, like middle ground, because I was shooting last night out to 45 yards, at the field in my house. I put my headlights out, my target out there, or not my house, at the camp, and I had a thing out to 50 yards shooting the practice tips that it comes with, and you know, shooting 3-inch groups with my field points with that thing, man. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm not gonna lie. I'm looking forward to
it. So I've used both. I've used the 2-inch, mostly the ones that I sent you, the 1 3/4 razor tip. I've used the 2-inch. I've bought a pack of those and I've shot them. And if I'm being honest, I couldn't really tell any difference. But if, with that being said, I'm not really sure how I expected much improvement because I was completely satisfied as it was, but I just wanted to try them, and they were about the same thing. I'm like, well, I mean, I'm more comfortable with the middle ground, and it's not like I'm seeing something that just drastically changes my mind here. So, Brian, you're a taxidermist. It's kind of an interesting – a question to ask here. These big, huge, gaping cut broadheads, if you get something that gets cut up into the front of the shoulder, I mean, is that a major problem for you as a taxidermist with the way these things slice?
No, it can be fixed. Not a big problem.
Okay. I've often wondered because, you know,
I believe in killing the animal first and then I'll worry about that later.
Yeah. Well, I shot a deer one time, and I'm actually looking at the mount here in my office, and it was a hard quartering away, and I don't know what happened, honestly, even how this happened. Maybe it was just the complete angle of it, but the arrow actually went in good behind the shoulder, quartering away from me, but it came out, like, between, the kind of tuft of hair at the brisket, before it really curves under the bottom of the throat, so to speak, before it curves under into the chest.
Yeah.
Like between there and the white patch, the arrow, the Grim Reaper was actually sticking out of his throat. It went, you know, and of course it was a pretty good exit, and you know, but you can't tell. I mean, the taxidermist did a really good job. I mean, I can tell where it's at because I know where it was, but
right.
I don't know. I'm always, this is a good kind of way to start off some of the questions about taxidermy. I'm always, I'm always trying to be extremely careful and meticulous about how I cut.
Right.
But, you know, in terms of the process, at least in your opinion, I mean, how much leeway do you really have? I mean, how bad's it really got to be for you to not be able to fix it?
I guess that would the best answer for that would be the length of it. I mean, a lot of times I get them in and they're just right there at the edge of being enough hide, and the rest of the hide I'm sure is out in the gut pile somewhere. Just bring me the whole hide if you have to. You can go halfway behind, halfway down your deer, make your ring all the way around it, cape it that way if you'd like, or just start skinning like you normally would, skin it all the way from the back and just bring me the whole hide if you want to. There's no need in trying to, decide where that line is to make your cut. And I get them in there. They'll be pretty butchered up at times, but then again, I'll see people that, like I said, some people, they'll just bring the whole hide, and that's fine. I can cut it where I need to cut it. That way, it ensures you to have enough hide for your form. As far as repairing cuts and stuff, that can be time consuming. It's just really that there's no extra cuts to really even be made. If you made yourself one ring around that belly, then you just cut your front legs off. You just cape him all the way down to his neck. When you're working on the neck, get as low as you feel comfortable. Whenever you feel like you're getting too far down, just chop it off, and I'll take care of it from there. If you want to go all the way to the back of the head, go all the way to the back of the head. It's just, and I'm here. There's plenty of videos out there. If you don't know, if it's your first deer or whatnot, look up how to do it. Call me. I can tell you how to do it. I have people call me, ask me how to do it. I'll tell them over the phone how to do it. If you want to bring it to me, bring it to me. I'll skin your deer for you. I've done that too. So,
yeah, I would think, given your line of work, I've never done it, but I would imagine you almost prefer that. It probably makes the whole process probably easier if you do it from start to finish, right?
Oh yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
You keep it the way you want to.
Like I said, I've had people call and do either way, and I don't mind at all. Bring it out, we'll skin it. You can watch me do it. You'll know how to do it next time,
Kyler, have you ever caped a deer out for taxidermy?
One time, I only have one mounted one. It's the one that Harmon did for me that I shot in Tunica a couple years ago. But yeah, that's the only one. That's it. I don't even think about it. It's not even a thought process to me. It's like, oh, I need to save this cape for a deer. I don't care how big it is. I'm probably just going to hang the antlers in my rafters. But a buddy of mine shot a big 6-point last week. And I think like you said, cut the neck off, leave it in there, I'll take care of it, or take it all the way back to the back of the head. Not to sound like like I can't handle it or anything, but if you get a big neck buck, it gets hard to get down all the way to the back of that head while that neck's still on the body. It's hard to maneuver in there. You start like gaining a quarter inch at a time on each slide, that gets a little rough.
Yeah, it gets tight. That skin is a lot tighter and to the meat there than it is anywhere else.
Yeah.
Brian, I'm sure you can fix it, but that's probably not the place where you want to accidentally cut through, right?
No, you don't. And I see a lot of it, especially in the brisket area or the neck area. That's where it'll be a lot of just – it looks like people – what it is when you're skinning down and you get down around that brisket area, around those front legs, I mean, I see it. People just get – they don't really know where to make the next cut, and they just start kind of chopping away with their knife, and that's where holes start. Mm-hmm. It'll be just holes all in the brisket. And, I don't – there's ways to go about it. Like I said, if you cut that front leg off, about halfway down there by the knuckle, if you just cut that leg off, and you can do that with your knife, just cut that joint. When you're caping down, if you have trouble around that brisket or that front leg area, what I'll do is I'll just take my knife and run it behind that shoulder blade, and I'll just pull that shoulder blade right up, just like pulling a sock. I'll just pull that leg right up through there.
Yeah.
And then you can just go ahead and finish on down. It works out pretty good that way.
I've learned that it's something that can be kind of daunting, but after you do it a few times, it is definitely something that gets easier the more you do it. It's just there's just certain little things you learn to expect and you learn to do, and it's not nearly as difficult. And I don't think it's difficult. I think what it is the person that is hunting, and let's just assume the the deer camp scenario here. You know, you're at the camp with your buddies, and you kill a buck that you're going to mount. So you've obviously, this is an exciting moment. You know, I mean, yeah, you've killed a big buck. Maybe it's one that you've been after. There's a lot of emotion and excitement attached to that. And now you're cutting on it with a knife, and you're very nervous. That's the impression that I feel like, you know, speaking to someone who's not done it very often, they're like, oh crap, I finally killed this deer. Finally going to get that mount on my wall that I've been wanting. And now I got to start cutting on it. And I think
and they're more than likely rushing through it. And they more than likely have five people looking over their shoulder and they're nervous, you know, whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an anxiety, anxious type thing, I think. But, what are some other things that, like, you know, if you could give a high level, broad do's and don't list for somebody, you know, let's start from the moment you put your hands on that deer. You know, you shoot the deer, you trail the deer, you find the deer. From the minute you decide, hey, I got to get this deer out of the woods and I'm gonna get him mounted. What's like your primary do's and primary don'ts that you would tell somebody if they're planning to have a deer mounted?
The very first thing when you get to him, of course, you want to make sure you're not fishing the, I mean, I know there's, and I saw your deer down in that gully that you got out, but like there's certain situations where you got to get him out, how you got to get him out, but you definitely want to, you know, watch how you get him out. I mean, if you know it's a shoulder mount deer, if you've got to get help, get help. I mean, don't just go to dragging. What you're going to expose on the wall, don't just go dragging it through a gravel road and expect you're going to not lose hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you want to prevent those, you know, situations.
Right. If you're frustrated with your property, the forecast for the season doesn't look too great, or maybe you've just decided it's time to move on and invest in your own property, contact our friend Slade Priest at Southern States Realty, a part of the Realtree United Country Hunting Properties Network, the largest network of hunting and recreational real estate experts in America. Nobody in our area sells more, and Slade's not just a realtor. He's not just a real estate agent. He's a passionate outdoorsman that understands what the buyers and sellers need. He knows how to put them together. He knows how to look at a piece of property and put the right people in the right place. Nobody sells more. You've seen him on outdoor TV. You see him on digital media. He spends his life in the outdoors. He's passionate about it, and it comes through in the results. If you're in the market, contact our friend, Slade Priest, the Hunting Land Man, huntinglandmanms.com. Check out all the new listings that he's posting on a regular basis, some exciting properties. Check him out, huntinglandmanms.com. As far as, I mean, we kind of talked a lot about caping, but are there, obviously you don't want things to rot, but I mean, in terms of, is there an advantage to getting it cold quickly?
Yeah. I mean, getting it taken care of quick. I mean, cause you could run into hair slipping situation, but right now, I mean, the second something dies, the only thing it's got to be dead good as hot as it is, it's covered in flies. Yeah. And they lay maggots, and that's just another problem. I mean, and a lot of these hot deer that's been coming in, I mean, there's no choice but to have, I mean, they're coming in that way just because it's that hot and they're just, you know, it happens. But I mean, in this type of weather, get it out of the woods, treat every part of it that you're going to look at for the rest of your life. Treat that, you know, with some respect on your hide or whatnot, get it out of the woods, you know, get it caped out properly. Either get it chilled fast or get it to me. Cause once it comes to me, I'm immediately wherever I'm doing, I'm going to drop what I'm doing. I'm going to cape that deer out. I'm going to get it measured, rolled up in the freezer.
Yeah.
So, but that's the main thing. If you've got freezer space, you go chunk that thing in the freezer, you know, give me a call. You know, if you want to wait a week, holler at me later, you know, just get it cold.
Yeah. I know you obviously don't want, you know, you don't want to have to deal with the maggot situation or any kind of rot, but is there, I have no idea about this, but I'm sure you've seen it at every single stage from poorly cared for to very, very well cared for. You know, is there any kind of like loss of integrity in the skin, like any kind of breakdown that happens that makes it harder to.
Absolutely. I would say main thing would be heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heat and bugs. I mean, just the,
that skin's not as strong, not as easy for you to tan.
Well, once you start losing hair, you can't put it back, you know, it's gone. So mm-hmm. then you're looking at having to you know, use another cape for your rack. So everything can be fixed in taxidermy, but you want to treat everything, and we're talking about deer, but anything in general. You know, you kill a squirrel, don't run over and grab him by, you know, if you want to mount him, don't go and grab him by the tip of the tail and yank his tail. You know, just care for things, ducks, whatever, care for them like you want to mount them. You know, handle them in the field all the way to the taxidermy shop, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, you want it to be as pretty as it can be, and like you said, you can't replace it.
If you want the best product back, bring the best product. And that's the way I've gotten so much mount in my own life, it's not even funny. But I always feel like I'm bringing the person the best, and it's not always going to happen. You're going to shoot a bobcat with a 300 Winmag. It's going to happen. I mean, just everything can be fixed, but just treat it like you want to mount it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just take care of it until it gets here, and I'll take care of it from there.
So I know you, I saw pictures, and I've spoken to you personally. I know you made a trip up to Missouri and hunted this year, and y'all killed a few deer. Talking about that, what are some of the things that you need to consider if you're having to, you know, you're on a hunting trip with the buddies for a week and you've got to, you got to tend to that deer. I mean, is it bad that it sits in, you know, kind of icy water or whatever? Yeah. I mean, what's the best thing you can do if it's going to be, you don't have a walk-in freezer, you don't have a deep freeze, you've got a cooler and you're on the road, you know?
So we've all ran into this situation hunting out of town, and you may just run up for a weekend out of town. But what you want to do is either know a local guy, local taxidermist, or you know, learn yourself to, you know, properly care for your hide. Say if you kill a buck you want to mount, find a local taxidermist you can go down there to, and they can skin it out properly for you so you can drive back. But the main thing is, you know, just get that if you can, if you can get that cape skin out, rolled up in a freezer and solid froze, whenever you get ready to go home, it'll be just fine in an ice chest with no ice on it. If it's froze solid, you're good to go.
It's like a Thanksgiving turkey, huh? Takes forever to thaw out.
Oh yeah. But if you're in a situation where there's no freezer, nothing like that, just pack it in an ice chest on ice. But you got to keep that water drained off. Get in a couple good garbage bags, get it tied, get it wrapped tight, and just get it on ice, and just keep that water drained off. Keep it packed on ice till you can get back.
Okay, that's good. I don't think people probably don't know this, and I kind of learned this myself. The deer that you have of mine that I killed in Missouri, there was a guy there right down the road from where we were hunting. An old man has been doing taxidermy for a long time, and I paid him like $25 cash, and he went ahead and caped it off of the skull and all for me, because you have to do all that when you're transferring. You can't. I couldn't just bring you the head. I had to debone it and all that stuff. And he told me, he said, "Tell your taxidermist." I can't remember what the number was, but he said 7.5 inches or something. And so there's a measurement. This doesn't really matter. People that may have not heard this, there's a measurement that you do from the nose to the eye socket or something that determines what size form that, you know, I guess what size deer it is or something.
That's correct. There's a couple basic measurements that you're going to make, and that's going to be tip of the nose to your eye. And then, you know, your neck, of course. You want to take a few good measurements from that. That's going to determine the proper form to order.
Yeah.
So, it's not a big thing that it's done before or after, because when I thaw it out and I prepare the cape, it's got to be, you know, fleshed and tanned, and everything's got to be. It's a lot of work in the prep work, so that measurement can be taken at any time. But it is convenient, you know, that some, you know, if it's written on there, it's, you know, it could help.
I was really just more curious because I'd often wondered, you know. Being somebody myself that hunts in the Midwest pretty much just about as much as I hunt it down here, really. I mean, so I'm hunting different deer, you know, as far as body type. And you know, when you look at these forms and all, it's like, I just never knew, like, how do they fit that? And so that was it's just interesting to learn how that measurement. And I guess that just defines the shape and size of the face.
That's right, and it's important. It's important to make good measurement. Get you a good measurement. That way, it's a lot less work when you instead of getting a form in that's not the right one for your deer, and then you end up having to make a lot of adjustments. And it's better to make good measurements. You know, it helps out in the long run.
So, what's score wise? What's the biggest deer you've gotten in this year?
Probably, I haven't scored the deer, but I've got a good one. He's I've got a non-typical that's pretty crazy too. He's a freak. I've got a lot of good deer in, but I would say I've got an upper 160s typical in here. He's really nice.
That and that's a local deer from Southwest Mississippi or Louisiana. Yep.
Yeah, I've got some good out of state deer too. Some really good ones. I actually got quite a few states in here that just came in. It's been some good ones coming in for sure. A lot of good local deer too.
Interesting. So, how at this point, I know it's you're early on in your business as far as this is really your first full time year to do this full time. But how far has your reach gotten? You know, it's like how far is people going to bring you deer? Or are you mostly just local clientele?
Let's see. I've got Kansas in here. I've got Missouri. I've got Illinois. I've got Texas, Louisiana. That's all I can think of off the top of my head as far as deer.
So, have you ever done a full body mount?
Have not done a full body mount.
I'm sure just in all of your training and stuff, I'm sure you've learned some stuff about it, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm fool with everything. Yeah.
I don't know anything about that. Like, I would assume if I'm gonna full mount body mount a deer, I need to just get him out of the woods and just bring him to you. Don't even touch him. Just get him to you and let the taxidermist tend to that, because I can't even imagine what that caping process is like.
Yeah. It's a job. Yeah, and I've done it now. I've caped out. I've skinned out everything you can think of. I've skinned it out, but yeah, it'd be a job, you know, for a taxidermist for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well,
Brian, I've got a question for you. I've wondered this. So when you're sending hides off to get tanned, is the taxidermist responsible for fleshing them out, or does the tannery flesh them out for you?
I don't send anything out. I do everything in house. I do all the fleshing, tanning, everything.
You tan in house. I didn't know that was possible. That's interesting.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That's really cool. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is like a trade secret. Now this is more just a question of mine. What type of tannins are you using? Because I know there's a lot of different ways to get tannins for tanning. I use acorns. I mean, hell, in the Middle Ages they were using urine. Is it a synthetic? Is it a real tannin solution? I've always wondered what that concoction is. What's it made of?
Yeah. Well, I guess they kind of make it easier now. You can pretty much just order tannin solution out of a taxidermy supply store. But
okay.
as far as your mounts go, you know, your deer heads and stuff, you're going to have what's a wet tan. So you're going to tan it, and it'd be different as if you was doing a rug. So you would do a dry tan. So it's a little bit different tanning process as far as like if you did a rug versus a wet tan, which is going on a shoulder mount to dry in place as where a rug would be a soft tan. And we've been actually taking on a lot of those. We got a lot of people bringing in full, you know, skinning out a full. A lot of times when you skin out your deer, I know everybody does it. When you skin out a nice deer hide and you just throw it on the ground looking at it like, man, that's a nice egg. Bring it to me. Let me tan it out for you. You know, that's really what I do this far as to preserve, you know, everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's cool. I didn't know that could be done in-house. I always have heard that people are typically
it's not a bad thing either way. I mean, a lot of people do send it to the tannery houses, and you know, there's good and bads on both ends. I guess if you get a lot of flow coming through to where you might have to do that, I mean, that's everybody's different. But as long as I can do it in-house, I'd rather, just because I keep my hands on everything. That's I like to have that hide for that rack, for that bag, for that label. I like to keep everything organized, and I like to keep my hands on everything. You know, right now, that's just the way I'm doing it. So,
very cool. All right. Yeah, I've always wondered that. Thanks for answering that.
I've heard at different times, different deer I've had mounted. You know, I've had taxidermists say, yeah, I got it done. It's just drying. What? How long is that drying process typically?
Typically 7 to 10 days. I mean, 14 days is a good dry time. But, you know, a good solid week, you're pretty much there. But, I mean, I like to give it, a good 14 days, get a good dry.
Is there much change that happens? I mean, how much does it draw up or anything like that?
It can. It's kind of like I said, all in the prep work. It's just if you do it right the first time and you watch it as it dries, I mean, it's hard to sit there and watch something dry. But if you're working in the shop, you know, you keep an eye on what you got lined up. And if something does dry and go to move, you can adjust it then, and you can adjust it if it dries. But I've found if you can get it like you want it when you mount it, you're gonna have a lot less problems down the road. And just like I said, keep an eye on it. Yeah. You know, fool with it while it's in the drying process.
Yeah.
And then once it dries and you like what you got and you got a good dry, then you can go back over and do all your finish work and get it prepped and ready for the customer, and it's good to go home.
Yeah. So Kyler, what's it gonna take for you to mount another deer? Because I know you've gotten in this mode of hanging them on your new camp porch, but what?
I've got customers that they're not in the shoulder mounts. You know, they just do skull mounts, or they may just do horns on a plaque. You know, I mean, everybody doesn't do shoulder mounts. And for those people that kill giant bucks, I love to get those capes. I mean, I hate to see a beautiful cape go to waste.
Yeah.
What'll it take? Honestly, it'll take a really good story. Brian, I know we've never met. I don't believe, but the thing that you need to know about me is I'm an adult onset hunter. I started deer hunting in my 20s. And then as another, just like really odd fact, just to give you another, view into my life and my exposure or non-exposure thing, I never grew up with a father figure in my life. And so I never started watching hunting shows. I never watched hunting shows. Like I'm watching my first Primos the Truth 74 right now at my camp for the first time ever. You know, Locke's watching these videos at my camp. He's like, yeah, I had that vest. Yeah, I had that call. Yeah, I had this. I had that 2004, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, this is the first time I've seen this video, you know? And so I never had exposure to all of the, you could say like nostalgia built in hunting stuff that's normal. Okay. Like my maximum exposure to the outdoors was watching Bill Dance when I was 10 years old with my grandfather. And then that's about it. And so I never grew up with the goal of having shoulder mounted deer. That was never something that I wanted. And the thing is that I don't think that people necessarily like want it like a desire. It's just what you do with a good deer. You shoulder mount it. It is the next that you hunt it all season, you kill it, and then you have it shoulder mounted and you look at it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That has never, like, I know it sounds odd, but that has never been something that was in my life. I'm not judgmental of it at all. What I'm saying is that I have a shoulder mounted deer, and it's the biggest deer I've ever killed. But when I look at that deer, I feel nothing more or less towards that deer than I do the ones that are hanging in the rafters on the porch of my camp, where I just cut the skull plate off and hung a tag on it with a couple of details, like the date, maybe what deer it was, a small detail, like et cetera, you know, what bow kill number or something like that. For me, I don't default to this, like, I got to get it shoulder mounted. Oh, it's my best 8-point. Got to get shoulder mounted. I'm more like, I would probably, and I'm not kidding you, I would probably shoulder mount a doe if it was the coolest story you've ever heard. That's just how I am. Because if I, like our friend Michael Pepper has a 14-year-old doe. If that was me, and he said he's going to shoulder mount her if he ever kills her. If that was me, I would shoulder mount a doe. Like, if I had that many years of history and she'd be dodging me for that long and I finally won the game of chess, I would shoulder mount that deer. But if it's a 160-inch buck that I killed in Kansas and I passed up two 150s to get to a 160, that if it's just a, hey, it walked into 20 yards and I shot it story, in my mind, I don't need to look at that deer shoulder mounted the rest of my life. I need a story. Like, there has to be an experience built into there. That's the thing that would make me shoulder mount another deer.
Yeah. So Brian, you don't know this, and we've mentioned it on the podcast, but some people may have never caught it before. It's unintentional, but it's ended up being a good thing. Kyler and I, as the host of this podcast, we are polar opposites in a lot of ways as it pertains to this podcast. You know, Kyler is the public land, mobile style of hunter. I'm more of the private land, pre-hung set, manager style of hunter. And I'm the guy who grew up taking pictures with my dad's stuff when I was too young to hunt and immediately hunting as soon as possible. Kyler is the guy who started hunting as an adult. And, you know, so we come at all of these topics from opposing...
Totally different perspectives.
Not always opposing, but just the polar opposite perspective. So in this regard, so you paint the picture for me. I grew up in this, every day of my life looking at the few deer that my dad had mounted and dreaming about having my own one day.
That was me.
You know, and then that carried into, like, you know, we had a hunting club and there were a few deer mounted in the lodge at the hunting club, but then I'd get the chance to go somewhere on a hunt and you'd go to this somebody's place and they'd have this room full of mounts and it was just like, oh my God, I want to have that one day. You know, you get to go on this special hunting trip and you go to this your friend's place or somebody's place and they've got a hunting lodge and there's just a wall full of these beautiful shoulder mounts and all this taxidermy and you're like, man. And I have that now. You know, I have an office at my house that's detached from the house that, you know, I have all my stuff in and I've got, I don't know what I have in here, 15 mounts, and then you've got a couple that you're working on for me right now. And it's, I don't really think any way of it other than it's just, I don't know. It just coming from a different background.
But out of those 15 you're looking at on the wall, I bet you could tell me what time you killed every one of them.
Oh yeah,
was that day.
It is.
That's what you want to remember when you look at it, you know.
It really is. I mean, it's really cool that part of it is really cool. And I'm happy to say that of all the mounts that I have, I only have one mount in here that doesn't have its own cape. And it's the deer, the infamous deer that's been talked about on this podcast many times. I shot it 2 years ago in Louisiana on December the 19th, and it went into the neighbor's pond. And it didn't float up for 5 days. I found it on the morning of Christmas Eve. It was floating in the pond. And it was really cold. And here's the catch of it all, man. This is the crazy part of it all. That was, talking about completely opposites, that year it was actually good weather this time of the year. Cold. That year it was cold. It was frost on the ground on Christmas morning, and it was cold that whole week. And the day I shot it, it was in the 30s that morning, and every single night it got down around freezing that whole week. And basically, the pond was a big pond, but it was shallow. So the water was really cold, and the deer didn't bloat for 5 days because of, just the temperature. So it took it a long time to float up. And when I found it, honestly, I went right after daylight. I was going to the office to do a few things and then off to do Christmas Eve stuff with the family. So I wasn't going to work all day. I was just going in for a couple hours. So I swung by the pond. I did that every day. From the time I blood trailed it to the pond, I kept going back every day. The landowner gave me permission to go check. And, the crazy thing about it is the deer didn't bloat. And when I pulled the deer out of the pond 5 days later, he looked like I had shot him the evening before. Wow. He wasn't bloated. He didn't stink. It was like he had been preserved in ice water for 5 days.
Yeah. Wow.
And I messed the cape up. There was nothing wrong with the cape. I messed it up because it was Christmas Eve and I was in a hurry. By the time I got him out of the pond and got him back to my house, I didn't have much time and we had to leave and go have Christmas with my wife's family. And I was trying to hurry up and get him caped because in my mind I'm thinking it's been 5 days. I definitely got to go ahead and get him caped out and taken care of now, you know, because I don't know what's going to happen here. And I got in a hurry and I cut wrong and cut into the brisket and ended up having to get another cape. So out of all these mounts, I only have one that doesn't have it. And I have one, the one I was telling you about earlier where the broadhead came out of the throat. That deer actually went. I shot him, one of the most gruesome shots in terms of just lethality that I've ever made on a deer with a bow and arrow. But I watched him go about 60 yards, and I saw two coyotes get on him and start chasing him. Wow. And they chased him until he died. I mean, they chased him until they caught him. And he went a mile.
Darn.
And this deer had, it was sticking out of his throat. I mean, it went all the way through him and out of his throat, and it was bad news. So he wouldn't have went very far at all if it wouldn't have been for that. But he went so far that he went onto somebody else's property, and by the time I got over there and got him, I couldn't get in touch with anybody to use their access road to get in there and get him. I had to actually cape him on the ground because I had to quarter him up to get him out of there. Mm. And, I was able to cape that one out and preserve that cape, but the one – from the pond is the only one I didn't get to. And another interesting story. I gave you a cape this year.
Mm-hmm.
That was the deer I killed in Kansas. And I was going to skull mount him and shoulder mount the one from Missouri. Well, if you go to the Scree's YouTube channel, I did a video on how to cape out a buck. And if you watch that video, that's the cape that I gave you.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. It's already mounted up. It looks great.
Well, so somebody's got my cape.
And it's a stud too. So you'll see a picture of it. It looks really good.
Awesome.
Well, so I recognize the fact that I'm really weird in the fact that my lack of experience in the outdoors as a kid kind of that it built my viewpoint towards shoulder mount essentially. And I like you said, you can look at all those deer and tell the story. I can do that with my antlers, but I know that I'm the oddball. And I was thinking about it while you were telling your story, Locke. The thing that will get me, I think, heavily on the taxidermy train is going to be when my kids start shooting. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to say a void, because that sounds sad. It's not like I had a sad childhood or anything. I just had a different childhood. But y'all have different experiences with animals and your fathers and history and all that stuff that I never had. But I want to have that for my kids. And so my kids now, as 4 and 2-year-olds, are deer obsessed. Like, I get home and my 2-year-old, deer. They want to show me my own deer every day when I get home, like I've never seen it before, ever.
Yeah.
And he's been waiting for me, waiting to show it to me all day. And my wife's like, he never shows me nothing. He waits for you to get home and show you that deer every single day, like it's 51st day, you know, where you forget everything every day. And so that, like, for them to have a shoulder mount on the wall, that would be really special for them. So that's the exception, I think. That will get me on to it. But it was just something that was never a part of my life. So I killed that deer in 2017. I killed that deer when I was 31 years old. So I was 31 when I got my first deer worth mounting, if you will. So I just was, you know, you're talking about entire life, half a lifetime of not even knowing that this really exists or is an option to me, you know.
I guess, Brian, it's, going into taxidermy, I mean, you have children, you know, young children as well, and boys, right?
I have a boy and 2 daughters.
Well, girls hunt just as much as boys do as well. So, I mean, I guess going into taxidermy full-time could be a cost savings for you down the road.
Yeah, well, my taxidermy bill is pretty high every year, so it's kind of like one of the can't beat them, join them kind of thing.
Well, we talked about my son a good bit in this episode, and I can tell you that, you know, kind of what I talked about just a minute ago with myself growing up, I'm creating a monster because he wants to mount everything. You know, like, now, he's killed a couple of deer that were worthy of mounting, and he's after another one that's bigger than either of those. But, yeah. I mean, you know, to your point, Kyler, with kids, it's special for a kid.
It is.
You know, it's very special for a kid to get a deer mounted. And he's, you know, I have two boys, and one of them doesn't really hunt. And when I say doesn't really hunt, he doesn't hunt at all. And, you know, we have two upstairs bedrooms, and they're kind of getting to that age where we're about to lose our guest bedroom because they're about to split up, you know. We're about to have a breakup in the household. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all my older son wants to do is just litter the entire room with taxidermy. You know, every squirrel he kills, I tell you a funny story before we wrap up. When I was on my trip to the Midwest, you know, he killed his deer that you have that you're mounting, the one he killed with his bow. He killed it at Halloween. Well, it wasn't but like a week later I left to go up on my Missouri and Kansas hunt. And so he's fresh off of killing a deer and us caping it and going through that whole process and getting it, you know, to you for getting it mounted and all. And while I'm gone, he kills a squirrel in the yard with a pellet gun. And this is a big deal because he's been trying to do this for a while. I don't know like why it got stuck in his craw, but he had decided, I'm killing one of these squirrels in the yard, you know. And so he kills a squirrel in the yard, and I'm on my trip hunting, and I start getting phone calls, and it's his mother and him. And he's convinced his mom he can't just skin it because he's going to mount it. You know, and there, so I had to, like, go through this whole, and long story short, we're not mounting the squirrel, but my poor wife had to go through the whole skinning process because she had to skin the squirrel because, first of all, you know, he's got to eat what he kills. And he did. He ate the squirrel. My wife had to handle it, and he's flipping out because he's like, you can't cut it like that, Mom. I can't mount it if you cut it like that. It's just a mess. I'm like, dude, you're going to kill a lot of stuff if you hunt as much. If you keep hunting the way you are now, you're going to kill a lot of stuff. You got to understand that it's cool to have taxidermy, but you can't mount everything that you shoot, you know. But to the point, for kids, it's a special thing, you know. It's really special for a kid. So, last question, and this has to do with kind of the preservation. I'm glad I thought about it before we wrap up here because I've kind of always wanted to know. Are there, you know, going back, I'm assuming taxidermy, like everything else in the world, evolves, right? Like the techniques and the tools and things that you use, I'm sure they come up with new and improved methods of doing things. I mean, are we at a point now where you can expect the lifespan of taxidermy? I mean, are the products and tools and stuff that you're using, is the preservation better? Because I know a lot of older mounts I've seen, they seem to degrade pretty heavily over time. I mean, have they improved that in the taxidermy world?
I would say so. They do look a lot different, but I'm looking at an old mount now from who knows how long, 40 years ago probably, and they're preserved. They're well preserved, but they do age, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
I'm not sure if we look at one of these new ones done, what it's going to look like in 40 years, but they're very well preserved, and they do have a different. I don't know if it's just a newer look compared to looking at some older mounts, and we've actually taken in a lot of older mounts that people want us to just revamp, you know, clean up and fix up, and we've done that with several, and they come out really well.
Well, I guess that's a good point to make, you know, on your behalf as well as just for people's information. If you inherit an old mount from your grandpa or something like that, there is a process for a taxidermist to go through and kind of revitalize that. And
yeah, absolutely. I've got a whole wall in here right now of things that people, from turkeys to fish to deer, people have brought me and said, you know, can you do anything with this? Or, you know, something they're not happy with. Say, can you do anything with this? And I'm like, sure, you know, I can absolutely do something with that. And I'll go with it through it with the customer. And, you know, what are you looking to do with this, and I'll accommodate however I can, and we get it looking real, you know, real nice. So
awesome. Well, that's good info. And you know, before we wrap up, I'll give you the chance to just kind of tell everybody the best way to get in touch with you, where to find you, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we're located here on Highway 48 between Liberty and Centerville, and it's kind of between Gloucester as well. It's kind of centrally located. We got a big white sign at the road, taxidermy shop. My number's out there, 601-248-6945. You can call me anytime. I'll work with you any way I can. And we have a Instagram page. It's at the taxidermy shop.
Cool. Very nice. Well, I hope everybody, hot or maybe on the cold front or otherwise, has enough success this year to have a reason to look you up. That's what we're hoping.
That's right. So. Well, we appreciate all our customers.
Well, one thing I need to do before we wrap up, Kyler, I said earlier this week that I was going to announce the winner of the review contest. We did a contest.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we did a contest that we asked. Scree has been very gracious and supported the podcast all year long, and so we decided to do a little thing where we ask all of our followers and the contributors for Louisiana Bowhunter to, if you've bought any Scree gear, to send us a review and just give us a review of the gear, and we were gonna draw randomly from that to pick a one of those reviews to win a gear pack from Louisiana Bowhunter, some of our hat and t-shirt and Louisiana Bowhunter gear, and we were gonna do that at Christmas. So we did that, and with this being the podcast after Christmas, the winner is Tori Terrio. So Tori Terrio from Sulphur sent us in a review. We appreciate you supporting our supporters and following Louisiana Bowhunter. I will be getting in touch with you if you are listening on this podcast. If not, you'll just hear from me, and we'll get your information. But we appreciate that.
Now that I know that, because I didn't know that, you picked the winner, or I don't know how you drew for it or whatever. But that's fine, because I know Tori. But I don't think you know this. Do you remember when I was in Oklahoma and mm-hmm. I posted that picture of a Louisiana boat trailer in Oklahoma, or just I said, you know, every coon ass that's hunting the Midwest brought their boat or something like that. There's not a boat launched by you or mm-hmm. a slough that doesn't have a coon ass boat. It was Tori Terrio's boat trailer.
Oh.
And I did not know that he was there in the same place that we were. And that was his boat and his truck. Which was ridiculous because he had texted me a few days before, but we had never. I don't ask people where they're hunting. You know, that's not something that I do. And so I posted a picture, and he's like, "Hey, that's my truck. Are you here?" And I'm like, "No way." So that's funny. That's cool.
Yeah,
he's great guy and big follower.
Yeah, so I mean, we just did a random drew a name out of a hat from all the names that submitted, and we had a good number of submissions. So we appreciate that, and appreciate everybody supporting our supporters and the brand, Brian included. If you kill a deer, give Brian a call. We appreciate you, Brian, supporting the podcast this year as well. And
yeah, thank you, buddy.
Wish you continued success with your taxidermy business. I know. I just, because I'm kind of in the same community as you, and I speak to you pretty frequently. I know you're doing well, and like you said, you got a bunch of deer coming in, so you got a lot of work to do. So that's exciting.
Yep.
So very good. Well, thank you for joining us, man. Hey, wish everybody a happy new year. Follow us online. Follow us all the different social media, Instagram, and share your pictures with us. We always looking for content and like to share pictures of people hunting and deer that they've taken from around the state. That's something that we love to do, so share that with us, and we'll get you out there. And be safe. Enjoy the New Year holiday, and enjoy this cold front. Wish everybody success, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@louisianabowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at louisianabowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.